Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Welcome to downtown St. Louis, where we are live once again in the poker room of the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel. I am Paul Harris, along with St. Louis's poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips. We are both just back from a weekend in Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas. What's that? Have you recovered yet?
I have not. I'm still exhausted. I don't know what it is. Even if I get back to the room at a relatively early time, and by that I mean 3 a.m., and I know I'm not going to play again until the next afternoon, I still can't sleep the whole morning through when I'm there. I don't know what it is.
I don't know either. Sometimes I am actually more rested when I never go to bed.
We were there for an event that Dennis was involved in called the WCOF, the World Championship of Fantasy Football, and another guy who was involved in that, and who you may know from the world of poker as Kid Poker, Daniel Negreanu, is going to join us in about 10 or 15 minutes here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. We're really looking forward to talking to him.
Yeah, I had no idea that Daniel was that involved in the fantasy football. He is way, way involved. He was involved in it. Gavin Smith was involved in it. Eric Lindrum was involved in it. These guys know more about it than I do.
Well, that's pretty evident from your results from the weekend.
Okay, let's
I'm rubbing it in right here at the top of the show, buddy. God. I'm rubbing it in.
First week.
Yeah.
Got killed, 144 to 94.
Nice.
But I beat Eric by 1 point, which is the only thing that matters because we have the prop bet going.
Oh, no, really? You got a side bet just with Lindgren?
Nice side bet. I'm now 1 point ahead.
Uh-huh.
94 to 93. So it's a $5,000 side bet.
Wow. Wow. Well, we'll talk about fantasy football and lots of poker with Daniel Negreanu in just a few minutes. We got lots of things in the news here. Before we get to any of that, I'm going to complain here at the top of the show.
Okay.
About the place where the WCOF took place this weekend. And this is not a reflection on Dustin and Jesse and the WCOF team because
they
did
great.
A great job. But the venue sucked.
Okay.
It was at the MGM Grand.
Yep.
I stayed there last, I don't know, about a decade ago. And I didn't like it because it was so huge that it takes you a half hour to walk anywhere. Reminded me a little bit of being at the Rio and having to go to the Amazon room every day, and that's a half-hour walk every day. But I didn't mind it because there were so many things going on, and you didn't always have to go that one place. But no matter where you go at the MGM Grand, it's forever. And then once you get there, there's always a wait. When I came down one afternoon at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon on the elevator, when I got off the elevator in the lobby, there were over 100 people waiting to get onto the elevators in this elevator bank. Now, it turns out there were 6 elevators in this bank, and they got 3 different banks. You know, one that goes to these floors, one that goes to these floors, one that goes to these floors. The one that was in the wing that I was in, of the 6 elevators, only 2 were operating.
Ouch.
So you got 100 people. Some of them had come off, you know, whatever their convention was that day. Some had just come out of the pool. Some had just checked in. And they get there, and they got to wait for elevators.
Yeah. That's actually, there was a number of different complaints. Holyfield was out there doing the celebrity draft.
Yes, Evander Holyfield.
Who is not a person I would like to upset, frankly, okay? he could have been treated much better.
Yeah.
He was rather upset.
I heard
times.
The story, and we may not want to go into details here.
But yeah.
Simple customer service. I'll give you another example. One morning, I was going to go play some poker, and I was going to watch, this was Sunday morning, I was going to watch some of the games. I thought, well, I'll go to the buffet first.
Yep.
I go to the MGM Grand Buffet. Not so grand. Again, over 100, maybe 150 people waiting in line. And they're moving the line so slowly. And I can see inside the buffet, there are dozens of empty tables. But they've got one person greeting you. How many in your party? 1, 5, whatever it was. She walks them to their table, and then she walks back. And there's no one else doing it.
Oh, my gosh.
So now it's just the next party. Walks them to their... There's 150 people in line waiting to eat, and they're not taken care of. And the really bad news was once you got in there, the food that was supposed to be warm, like, oh, I don't know, eggs and pancake and French toast, cold. The fruit that's supposed to be cold, warm. Hi, I'd like some cold eggs and some warm cantaloupe, please. Oh, we can't do that. Well, you did it yesterday. So, I mean, you just wait for everything there. And the only thing about the MGM Grand I like is that incredibly soft 2-5 game that they have.
Well, this is true. It's a very nice one.
You and I played in one session there, and I actually played 2 or 3 sessions there over the weekend, and every one of them was very nice and profitable.
Well, I don't know. When you walk back to the ballroom we had, which, again, was about a three-hour hike, I think.
Yeah.
But two-thirds of the way
Southwest is running shuttle flights there. That's how far it is.
The only nice thing about it was about two-thirds of the way back there, you got to look at the pool.
Yes.
Notice you said yes very quickly.
There was some serious eye candy at the
pool. Yes, there was. Absolutely.
Serious.
I have to admit.
All right, let's get to some news here.
Okay.
From the Borgata in Atlantic City, congratulations to Abraham Karatki for winning the women's event at the Borgata.
Yeah, explain that one to me.
Abraham Karatki, a 65-year-old man, took home the trophy and the $21,000 first prize.
Okay, do we really have to comment on this? This is worse than Joan Rivers almost.
The woman who came in second, Nicole Rowe, said, you know, when you're a woman and you play poker, 99% of the time you're at a table with 9 men. Playing against a field of women is something I look forward to. Why did he have to ruin this for us? Why would he do this? Karatki, the guy, says he's a semi-retired real estate developer. He says that he's donating his winnings to charities, including one dedicated to breast cancer, and said his motives were purely innocent. He explained that he entered the women's competition after quickly being eliminated from another more expensive tournament in which he went all in with aces and got beaten by 2 pair. He was frustrated and wanted to get back on the horse, so he signed up because he had heard that 5 or 10 other guys were in the registration line. But the Borgata officials say, no, we didn't have any other guys signing up for the women's event, and none of the women who played in it said any men were playing in it. He says that if the Borgata staffers had told him he couldn't play in the tournament, he insisted he wouldn't have made a fuss if he'd just been asked to stay out of it. He says, if they said to me, Abe, you can play, but please don't, I would have said fine. I would have gone home and been bored until the next tournament. As for the Borgata, they say they didn't have a choice. They say, we offer specialty tournaments, and the spirit of this event, it was our hope that only women would participate, as has happened in the past. However, given legal requirements, we must allow anyone over the age of 21 the opportunity to participate. They can't ban you based on your gender, even if it's a gender-specific event. Now, why is it that the WNBA can have only women, the LPGA can have only women?
Yeah, there's only one locker room. What can I say? I don't know. This is so ridiculous.
I think there was a guy who did this in the women's event at the WSOP this summer.
Oh, there were like 6 guys in it. You know, it's just ridiculous.
One of them dressed up as a woman.
I hope he was dressed as a woman. Let me put it
that
way.
Well, he was wearing a dress and some...
What? Well, he did shave, so you know, that's part of it.
He didn't shave enough.
Okay.
Anyway, the guy wins. Oh, by the way, when it got down to the final two, Abe wouldn't chop unless he got the trophy. And the woman said, I'll be honest with you, I'm playing for all women here against you. Let's play it out. And he ended up winning it.
Okay, I'm guessing Abe's never been married.
Or maybe he has, and that's why.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
He'll never be again, probably.
What else is in the news here? You may remember a few weeks ago we talked about the nominees for the Poker Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And one of the names that was in that on that list, which, by the way, was voted on by the general public. The WSOP announced that anybody who wanted to could vote online for who should be nominated for the Poker Hall of Fame. And the names included Barry Greenstein, Dan Harrington, Phil Ivey, Tom McAvoy, Eric Seidel, Mike Sexton, Men the Master Win, Daniel Negreanu, and Tom Dwan. At the time, you said...
Oh, I said it's totally ridiculous to put somebody like that in there with these legends. Now, he may be the greatest player on earth right now. I really don't care. You've got to be there. It's like the Hall of Fame for baseball. Minimum of 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why. You put a guy like this in there, he may be the greatest guy around. I don't care. That's just an insult to the other players.
Could be a flash in the pan. Is only around for a few years, too.
There's no way he deserves to be on there.
Well, the criteria for the Poker Hall of Fame are, one, a player must have played poker against acknowledged top competition. You could say that about Dwan. Played for high stakes. Certainly does that. Played consistently well, gaining the respect of peers. I think he's done that. Stood the test of time.
Oh, wait a minute. At 6 months?
Even if it's a couple of years.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
I mean, when you talk about guys like Tom McAvoy, Phil Ivey even. I mean, Ivey's only 34, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you could probably possibly make an argument that even though Phil may be the greatest poker player of all time,
It's
still a little bit early to talk about the Hall of Fame for him.
Kid Poker is obviously a Hall of Famer.
Daniel Negreanu.
There's no doubt about it. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. But he's still in his prime. Why put him in the Hall of Fame now?
Of course, Barry Greenstein would tell you he's still in his prime, but he's also been playing the game for a really, really long time, as has our friend Mike Sexton.
Oh, absolutely.
Who you and I both feel should be a lock.
He is absolutely a lock.
And Dan Harrington, I think, should be a lock in there.
Yep.
So Tom Dwan not in there. Now, here's the interesting thing to me. The committee decided to take Dwan off the list, the governing council of the Poker Hall of Fame.
Yep.
If there's going to be a governing council of the Poker Hall of Fame, why open it up to voting by the public? Why have 5 weeks of people voting online for who should be nominated if they're going to have a governing council that then says, no, we'll decide who the nominees are? Does it make sense to you?
Okay, be careful. You're being logical around here. That gets you in trouble.
The decision on who will actually make it will go to the 15 living Hall of Fame members and the 15-member media panel who will cast their votes. Anybody who gets 75% of the votes as a yes vote will go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So it's not like only one person can get in.
Yeah, that's true.
Possible that Barry and Dan and
Mike Sexton
could all get three-quarters of the votes, and they could all be going in there.
If Mike Sexton doesn't get 100% of the vote, there's a problem.
I would agree with you. Absolutely.
He should be 30 for 30 there.
All right, what else is in the news this week? The World Series of Poker people have made a deal with a company called 888 Holdings. You may not be aware of them in the United States, but they are very responsible for writing some of the software that runs a lot of the European poker sites. Now, you're affiliated with PokerStars. I don't think 888 is involved with Stars.
No, they are not at all.
Well, the WSOP, and we've talked about this before, is getting into online gaming.
Yes.
Harrah's Interactive is the name of the new company that your friend Jeffrey Pollack is the head of, and they've hired the head of Party Gaming to be their
chairman. Only reason that is set up is to be available and ready to go when the ridiculous laws are actually finally changed.
Harrah says they have no timeline for their online launch, but they have confirmed that they are moving forward with this so that they can jump in when the time is right. The intent is to be in the online gaming space wherever it's legal, says Seth Polansky, who's the communications director for the WSOP.
Yeah, and to establish one of these, the entire, I don't even know what you would call it here, this whole software setup is hugely expensive.
Yeah.
But to actually partner in with somebody who already has it in place, it's a win-win situation for both of them.
You helped ESPN get huge ratings last week, Dennis.
Excellent.
You and Phil Hellmuth were both featured on Day 2B, which was ESPN's coverage last week, and it was the highest ratings of the year.
Do I at least get a couple of football tickets or something out of it?
You get credit and a warm handshake. That's about it.
Okay.
But ESPN had gotten lower ratings early on because of the Antioch for Africa and the Champions Invitational, which didn't draw huge audiences. People want to see the main event.
They really do.
And they want to see the stars of poker.
Yeah.
Later on, we know when we get to the final table, there is one big star of poker, Phil Ivey, who's going to be at that table, and a couple of medium stars and a bunch of unknowns.
Yeah.
But by that time, the story has been at least set up by all of these well-known names who will be in there. And last week, you and Phil Hellmuth, who were at Feature Table 1 in his case and Feature Table 2 in your case, helped ESPN get their biggest ratings of the year thus far.
They didn't show the hand I had against the grinder. I really wish they would have. That was I took about three-quarters of his chips.
What was the hand? Do you remember?
Actually, I flopped the nut flush draw. He flopped a set.
Uh-huh.
He was betting into me, but he kept getting the bet low. He was trying to – he didn't know for sure what I had. He was trying to get as much as he could out of me with a set. He assumed he was golden.
Uh-huh.
And he made a bet on the turn that was about 35% of the pot was all.
Really? That's all?
Well, we had a good chunk of our chips in here going on the thing. And I went ahead and called him. I had to think about it. It might have been 40%. It wasn't a monster bet or anything like that. And then the club came on the river. He, to give him credit, very, very good player. He checked. I made a value bet on it, and he went into the tank. And back and forth and back and forth, and 5 minutes later, he folded his hand. Showed me the third six.
Wow.
And folded his hand.
Wow.
Great play. It really was. It was a great lay down by him, and I had the nuts. So, well, sorry. I had the winning hand. I did not have the nuts.
Yeah, a full house or quads, I guess,
would have been
the nuts
there.
Yeah. All right. Joe McGowan's actually telling me that they showed that hand.
They did show that hand?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I must have been on a coffee break or something.
I don't remember seeing it either.
All right, I did not. I don't remember seeing it.
Anyway, Joe, the poker coach, McGowan, is going to join us later on in the show. But when we come back from this break, Kid Poker, Daniel Negreanu joins us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. Both Daniel and Dennis are members of Team Poker Stars Pro.
Team Poker Stars Pro. Guys, if you want to play the really quality poker, you need to go to Poker Stars. That's it. It's 24/7, every game in the world. You'll find Daniel there. You'll find me there. You'll find the other 33 pros on there playing. Right now they've got a fantastic thing going on. It's the World Championship of Online Poker. Been playing it all week. Daniel's been playing it. We are going to continue to play it. And the Monster is coming up on the 20th of this month. A $10 million guaranteed for that event.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, it doesn't get any sweeter than that. So anyhow, go to PokerStars.net, download it, perfect your game, and join us. You'll have a lot of fun.
Proud to have PokerStars as one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Plays Final Table. We're back with Daniel Negreanu right after this.
In just two short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with two-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room. Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel, the poker player's clothing. Founded by Kevin Steffen, a fellow poker player from right here in St. Louis. You'll find him online at onetimeapparel.com. From T-shirts to polo shirts to baseball jerseys to scoop neck T-shirts for the ladies, One Time Apparel has the shirt you should be wearing around the poker table. And if you're a baseball cap kind of guy, Kevin's got you covered with fitted hats and flexible hats. He's got the four aces hats that come in three colors. For the ladies, he's got a pink camo hat. He's got organic shirts. He's got 100% cotton shirts. All of these with great original designs, and you can see all of them when you go to the website, onetimeapparel.com. Kevin takes his clothing all over the United States to poker tournaments, and people are buying it up everywhere he goes.
Absolutely.
Every poker player knows that one time slogan. Come on. Let my flush hit this one time. Let my straight hold up this one time. Let my two pair hold up this one time.
Let my ace high hold up. Yeah, okay. Anyhow.
That's what One Time Apparel is all about. Go to the website, see what he's got, charge it to your credit card or use PayPal. A portion of the proceeds go to various charity organizations. That's onetimeapparel.com.
Our guest tonight has won four bracelets. He has cashed 42 times at the World Series of Poker. He's also taken two World Series Tour Championship titles, and he was named Poker Player of the Year for 2004. So far, he has over 11 million in actual live tournaments, putting him behind Jamie Gold and Phil Ivey, and I'm quite sure that he's not going to stay third for long, knowing him. You've seen him on High Stakes Poker and pretty much every other poker show on TV. He had a book last year that he published called Power Hold'em Strategy, where he explained his idea on the small ball, which we can talk about tonight. Had other contributions from Eric Lindgren, from Todd Brunson's, other players on that. I want to welcome a fellow member of Team Poker Stars Pro, Daniel. Welcome to the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Well, good to be on the show. Fan 590, huh? That's so reminiscent. In Toronto, that's my favorite station. So,
is that right?
Yeah,
oh,
that's the sports station in Toronto, Fan 590.
Alrighty. So, hey, real quick, how did your teams do this weekend on the fantasy?
Ooh, baby. In the World Championship of Fantasy Football, I won by about 11 points. In my other league with Eric and the guys, I ended up winning by 4 yards. So I won by 24 points.
Oh, wow.
1-0 in both leagues. Very happy about it.
Oh, well, I am 0-1. I got killed. Right. I went against the guy by the name of Peterson that just killed my team on it. 180 yards,
well,
three touchdowns.
Good.
Yeah, whatever. But I bet on my side bet with Eric. Yeah, I got 94 points. He got 93. I'm 1 point ahead of him.
There you go. So
that's the only thing that matters is beating Eric right now.
Daniel, you are really into the fantasy football, aren't you? You had a couple of different drafts, and one of them, I understand from the guys at the WCOF, was a thing that you and Lindgren and some other poker players had been doing on your own, and you kind of brought it under the WCOF banner this weekend, right?
Yeah, well, actually, I should correct you. I'm a fantasy sports nut mostly. I prefer fantasy hockey. I've been doing that for years, and that's my real passion. The football is just sort of a sidebar. I don't know the players as much as I do in hockey. But having said that, I understand auctions, which are real drafting. If you don't auction, you're a pansy, and you should start and forget about the snake draft. It's boring. It's just you're a pansy. If you don't auction, you're just a pansy, and you're in a pansy league. But having said that, yeah, we did do our league this year. I mean, Chris Porter of Poker Royalty was the one who organized it and said we'd throw it out there. And so we did our auction there, and our auctioneer was like, I guess you could call him like a Nazi. He wanted that thing done fast. So he just burned through him. He's like, Adrian Peterson got 21 points. That's old. What? Wait a minute. Somebody might bid on him. Chill.
Well, I know. I kept watching you guys. You were having a blast over there, even with the Nazi in control. So I had a heck of a good time this weekend. I assume you did?
No, I love it. I mean, you know, the atmosphere is really cool. I ended up, I don't know if you saw the game. They had a drinking game there called the Arkeg. I bought one. It's the coolest thing ever. It's got every video game system from the year before 2000. And I think old games are better than new games. New games are too annoying and hard to figure. But the kicker is that in my video game, I actually have a keg of beer that with a tap on the side, so I can play video games and drink beer at the same time. What's cooler than that?
Oh my God!
That is great. I like that.
That's better than the ones in the hat with the little spout coming down out of it. You know. Oh, anyhow, right. Hey, we've been talking about the WSOP, and you're on that Player Advisory Council, right? First
yep.
of all, you know, what did you think about this year and what might be fixed? And the second question, you don't have a 40K for next year. You don't have a Champions Invitational. What's ESPN going to go to then? Have you got any new ideas, anything maybe you're going to institute this time, bring into it?
Well, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I think that we're getting better and better each year with in terms of how the World Series is run. And I think, you know, you can gauge that by hearing how many complaints we get. And there's always complaints. You always have guys like Alan Kessler who just does that for a living. He's just like, what can I complain about now? This is getting annoying. So I think he's getting more annoyed with the World Series now because there's less to complain about, so he's going to make up more stuff. But overall, I think we've done such a really good job with the schedule and stuff, and it's only going to get better. The 40K
yes.
was just a one-year anniversary-type deal, as was the Tournament of Champions. There is one of my suggestions that I actually posted on the forums. I think they're going to implement. So there will be another cool event this year. I think even more skillful than any No Limit Hold'em tournament you've ever seen. I think it will make the 40K No Limit look like it was a crapshoot. This is going to be a much more skillful event. I can't really tell you yet because the schedule hasn't been released.
Sweet.
But let's just say be innovative. Think about what really makes for skillful No Limit Hold'em. And I think the online guys will have an inkling where I'm going with that. High
it's $100,000 Indian, isn't it, Daniel?
Well, never mind. I'm sorry, we were talking about high roller events.
Sooner than it's ever been before. Look to see it. I think they're saying by the end of the year, you know, everyone will be able to see the schedule.
Well, one of the things that we've been talking about is the fact that the 50K horse was not televised this year, and a lot of that is because, and we've talked to some people at ESPN.
Well, the main reason is because people just didn't listen to me. Okay.
and when you say they didn't listen to you, you mean that they didn't go to an all No Limit final table?
The people got really confused with what that event was, okay? The first year it was implemented, the event was, and it was never just horse. We called it horse, which I guess was not exactly accurate, but the event was always primarily designed to be horse leading to the final table and switch to No Limit Hold'em. A couple
yes.
people complained, and they wanted it to be horse, so they made the switch. Unfortunately, horse on television does awful in the ratings. Nobody
yep.
gets it. Nobody wants to watch it. So we essentially shot ourselves in the foot. ESPN, you know, had made it, you know, made it said, we're not going to film this thing unless it's No Limit Hold'em at the final table because we're just not going to get any ratings. So they asked, you know, maybe if we could switch it. And I was all for it, and I think it's the absolute right move to make. Some other people disagreed with me. I'm right, they're wrong. No surprise there. That's pretty much how it goes when I disagree with people. So I'm hoping, and we're talking, you know, about the event next year and some possible changes that could make it better.
Well, I know when I talked to Jeffrey out there, he said, well, we'll probably the 1K was so successful, we got to do something that way. He says, you got to realize so many people come out here to play in one or two events, and they're playing in 1,000 or a 1,500 or a whatever. And it's their vacation of the year for some people almost. So he wanted to accommodate more of those. And with the 6,000 they had this last year, he said, we will definitely have some more lower buy-in ones and really try to get the people involved.
Yeah, you know, originally, when they came up with the idea for the stimulus, the 1,000 buy-in, originally I was opposed to it because there was talk about making the structure better than the 1,500s, and I'm always opposed to anything like that. However, you know, we finally agreed on a structure, and now I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea. It brings people out, as you mentioned. You know, it's a good event to have on the weekend, so I don't have to play it, and I can have my weekends free. and you have, like, 6,000 people, like you said, with a dream and a shot. It's, you know, it's good revenue, obviously, for Harrah's. It's good for the players that don't want to spend. I mean, it seems to be a significant difference between 1,000 and 1,500 for players making the decision to play in a World Series event.
Yeah, and I'm not for sure why, but you're absolutely right. It seemed like everybody else signed up for the $1,000 one. 1,500, eh, I don't know.
We're talking with Daniel Negreanu here at the Lumiere Plays Final Table. Paul Harrah's and Dennis Phillips, thanks for joining us tonight. We asked some of our listeners who follow us on Twitter to submit some questions for you. Let me get to a couple of those, Daniel. A guy named Mickey has a question about an episode of High Stakes Poker, and it just so happened that this one was rerun this weekend, so maybe he saw it on Sunday night, and he saw it. It was an episode in which you had 9-8, and Doyle had a pair of 10s, and the flop came Jack-10-deuce. And he checked, and you bet, and he just called with his set. Then a third club came on the turn, and it went check, check. And the river was another jack, and it went check, check again. And Eli Elezra at the other end of the table when the whole thing was over was surprised that there wasn't a lot more money in the pot. And you said something about never playing hard against each other, that you and Doyle just don't want to play hard against each other. And Mickey wants to know, is that really true? Do you soft play against guys like Doyle?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't soft play my grandmother. But realistically, that hand was, I remember the hand vividly. And, you know, the way Doyle had been playing, he'd been really waiting in the weeds. There was a lot of aggressive players at the table, and he was really playing a very trapping style. So when he called me on the flop and you know, the way the cards rolled out, I knew to just put on the brakes. And Doyle, you know, was assuming that I didn't have anything. So from his perspective, he's thinking, okay, well, if I bet, Daniel's not calling me. So maybe he'll try to bluff at it. And I ain't going to bluff at it because I know Doyle's sitting there in the weeds. So that's why the hand that looked like it should have had more money and just went check, check to the river.
All right. Well, by the way, that was the same episode where, unfortunately, you ran into David Benjamin's quad fours.
Well, you can say that about almost every episode that I ran into quads because somebody sent me an email and told me that, you know, do you know this, Daniel, that quads have only appeared four times on that show? And I was like, really? Yes. And you happen to have a hand in all four.
Oh my gosh!
It was also the episode where Peter Eastgate threw out a huge overbet, and you mentioned something about him getting the wrong color chips, which was very very funny. When you're doing that show and you see a guy like Peter Eastgate, or more like the younger guys like Tom Dwan and Zygmunt and Viffer sitting down in the game, here you are, the guy who has been nicknamed Kid Poker, who are now moving into the veteran years of poker. I wonder what you think of playing against those guys in a high-stakes game like that.
Well, I think it's fun, you know, and I think I look back at some of the mistakes I made when I was younger in my 20s and stuff, and, you know, not to say that they're making mistakes, but just sort of a different type of style of play, which is a little more aggressive, a little more reckless. And as you get older, I mean, I used to, like, think that older players were weaker, if you will. But then, as you hit around 30 years old, you start to realize that there's actually method to the madness. It's an image change, if you will, to some degree. You know, you open yourself up for more bluffing opportunities against some of these kids. So it's some adjustments, but it's fun. You know, I like the idea of the game evolving and, you know, players playing a better style of poker and making it tougher, you know, because in the last 5-6 years, you know, the appropriate style that you could win with in a cash game has changed. You know, you can't just sit there anymore and wait for your opponents to make big mistakes because they just don't as often anymore unless you have some real suckers on the line.
Well, the quality of play has definitely stepped up. I don't know if it's been the internet gambling. I don't know what it's been, but definitely the quality has. A couple other quick questions. We talked earlier about the Hall of Fame nominees and the fact that Tom Dwan has been dropped from that list now on it. Had you heard about that?
Yeah, I had. I actually said something about it. I think it was in a blog or something. But, you know, I felt like I really don't love – I actually was a video blog. I don't love the idea of the fans kind of getting a vote in terms of, like, who the 10 nominees are and sticking with that. Because then what happens, a lot of guys that, you know, new people don't know about slip through the cracks, okay? A guy like Eric Drake, he was the inventor of the satellite. You know, he ran the World Series for years. He played high stakes. He's an older guy. You know, not a lot of people would know who he is today, but he's not on the list. A kid like Durr is because he's new, he's fresh. A lot of the internet kids would, you know, would look up to him. However, there's one key statistic there, or there's one key quality I think you have to have, and that's the test of time, and he's 22 years old. Okay.
There you go.
Even if he started at 14, that doesn't qualify, because when you're in your 20s, and I know this because I did it, in your mid-20s, you go through phases where, you know, at 22, I said that I was one of the best players in the world, I thought, and I probably was. And then at 25, I was probably one of the worst. But then around 27 or 28, I started to get myself back. So everyone goes through those ruts, and the question is, how do people bounce back from that, or do they? So we see a lot of guys come and go. There's been internet phenoms that you hear about, you know, every 6 months or so. This guy's the next Ivy. This guy's the next Ivy. No, Ivy's the next Ivy, and he's going to stay the next Ivy.
Yeah, right now there is one Phil Ivy, and that's it.
Daniel, here's another question we got. This one came in via email to DennisHillosPoker@gmail.com from a guy named Josh, who says, Daniel, how in the hell do you know everyone's cards, and why in the heck do you talk about what they have during the hand? And the other question is, when are you going to be on Dancing with the Stars? Based on your dance, based on your dance offs at the Poker Stars party being put up on YouTube.
All right. Well, Dancing with the Stars. You know what? Hey, I'll throw my hat in the ring there. I'll shake it down a little bit. Sober though, because when you drink, you start to think you can do these weird moves you can't do. But as for the other part of the question, which was, now I'm forgetting.
How in the hell do you know what everybody has,
right.
And why do you talk about it during the hand?
I don't know what everyone has, but, you know, after you play with people for a certain amount of time, you start to get the feel for their betting patterns and the type of hands that they're willing to play. So you can always come up with a most likely hand, and I'll often verbalize it, the hand I think that they have. And I verbalize it for a couple of reasons. One, I may want them to know that I know. You know, there was one hand on ESPN where I sensed the guy had aces, and I'd flop top pair, and I wanted him to know that I knew what he had because I felt that might slow him down, and he did. He checked the river, so I didn't have to pay to find out if I was right. But the other reason I'll do it, sometimes it's for a reaction. You know, you tell a guy what he has, and either A, you know, he's psychologically defeated, or B, you know, he gives away some sort of physical tell. So there's method to the madness.
Oh, I agree 100%. I was down on the PCA playing a table with a young kid over there. Made the normal bet. I had pocket sevens. I called him. The flop came out there. I looked at him and said, your ace king is no good. And he wilted right in front of me.
Yeah.
And then he checked. He literally, I had no idea for sure that he had ace king until he got the reaction from him.
Right.
It's real simple then. But no, it's good philosophy. Got another question for you. I mean, I was talking to Doyle, and I heard him say it to a couple of reporters, too. He says he's not going to play the WSOP next summer. I mean, it's a shame if he doesn't, but surely Doyle's going to come back and play some.
I'll take action on that, but we can't let Doyle know. I would bet heavily that he's going to play the main event at the World Series next year.
Oh, you and me both. I won't take that action. You'd have to give me tremendous
odds.
It's
easy to say that after you finish because it's a whole long month, and he played cash games, and he must have been drained and, you know, frustrated by, you know, you don't win a bracelet. It's annoying, but... But, you know, he'll have a full year to recuperate, and when he does, he's going to definitely want to take part. You know, he loves the action. He loves the fact that he's still got a mind of a 23-year-old, and he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, I'd like, if you would, because you're a friend of his, to defend Doyle a little bit from some of these online guys who have been really hitting him in some of the forums lately, saying, you know, the guy hasn't done anything recently and he's old. And, you know, I guess they watch him on high stakes poker, and Gabe Kaplan ribs him a little bit for getting a hand wrong when he thinks he knows what other people have and all that sort of stuff. We, of course, know that the guy is a legendary poker player and has been for decades. But what do you say as a friend of Doyle's to those detractors?
Say the facts are wrong, first of all, the goal in a high-stakes poker cash game is to win money, right? Doyle's won money every single session he's played on there. Whether or not you disagree with the way that he approaches it, he knows what he's doing. He's winning money every time. It's hard to say that this guy sucks if he wins every single time he plays. You know, aside from that, what has he done lately? Tournaments are not the barometer, especially for somebody who has a lot of money already, okay? Doyle isn't playing the grind in tournaments. He doesn't play all the WPTs. He's not 24 years old anymore. So, sure, maybe against some of these kids playing 15-hour days for seven straight days, they might have an advantage over him. But why don't you tell these kids to build a bankroll and come play mixed games with Doyle? Because I'm sure he'll oblige. He'll get up off his butt and head down to Bellagio if you'd like. And he's been doing that for, what is it, like the last 50 years or something, and he's heard all the talk from the up-and-comers and stuff like that. And you know what? The up-and-comers often go home with a story. Very few of them stick around to have another opportunity. So it's absurd, and it's really offensive, frankly, for young kids to really sort of attack Doyle, who's like literally one of the key reasons why they even have an opportunity to make the kind of money that they do. I'm personally offended by it, and when I hear kids talk like that, I want to slap them upside the head, frankly.
I couldn't agree more. I'm telling you, anybody that knocks Doyle, in my opinion, doesn't need to be playing poker because he's the one that carved it out for him to start with. I absolutely agree with you on that.
Daniel, how often do you sit down in Bobby's room with him and the rest?
Well, I used to on a regular basis, probably up until about a year or so ago, until golf, I would say. my passion kind of changed a little bit. I started playing a lot more golf, probably a year and a half ago. And, to be competitive and play in the biggest games, you have to be playing consistently. I don't want to be a weekend warrior who just comes in once in a blue moon and, you know, you have to sort of be like in that soldier mentality. And I have been out of the game for quite a while. I've been playing more online at PokerStars because now we have a game that I love. We got the 4-800 mixed game, which has all the games we'd play in the big game anyways. So there's a little more convenience in playing here, you know, at PokerStars. Aside from that, I haven't had a ton of time. You know, with PokerStars, I do a lot of travel across the world, to Europe, as Dennis does as well, so he knows exactly what I'm talking about. But I am looking at my schedule for around December, and I'm hoping that there's some games because I'm planning on sort of stepping back in there because I do really enjoy playing against the best, and the only place you'll find them is at the Bellagio.
Which of those mixed games do you prefer?
Well, I like all of them because I feel like one of my strengths is the fact that I don't play any one particular game much worse than the other, so they're all very similar. So I like the more the merrier. My favorite, just because I think it's the most fun game to play, is Stud 8 or better. I feel like I read hands better in that game than any other game. But, you know, it depends on the day. Like the deuce of seven triple draw is always good for action. All the games are integral to making the game fun because I don't like playing the same game over and over. It's kind of like, I don't know, too boring.
Well, you've got four bracelets, but I don't think any of them are no limit hold'em, are they?
No, my first one was pot limit hold'em. Then I won a hose event, which is like horse without the raz. And then I won, actually, the last two I've won are limit hold'em. The same one,
okay.
Without limit hold'em, yeah.
All right, cool. Got another question for you. Aren't you involved in that PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge that's coming up starting, I think, October 11th?
The TV show?
The TV one, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, actually. The concept, we've actually ironed it out a little bit yesterday at a conference call with some of the guys, and I think we've really got it all figured out, you know, in terms of what viewers want to see, making it interesting. The format's going to be fun. Obviously, if you can actually check, if you go to PokerStars.tv or if you YouTube PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge audition tapes. The way to qualify is through PokerStars. You can play in these free rolls. If you finish in the top 10, okay, you have the opportunity to send in an audition tape. So then, you know, the brain trust looks at who they think, you know, will be the most fun for television, and it's as simple as that. Those people get chosen, and those people will come out to, we're going to shoot it in L.A., and have a chance to potentially play me for $1 million legit, you know? So it's... It's fun, and I can't wait to do it. We're going to shoot, I think, first week of October.
Okay, well, I may have my information wrong. I thought that you were coaching them for the first few weeks, and then December 27th is when you play them heads up or something. Have I got that
wrong? Well, I don't know if we've released the entire structure of the event, but there is an element of that, absolutely. You know, we're going to have some of the team pros involved. We're going to have some celebrities involved. We're going to have a lot of things going on, and my interests will change. If you'll see that... I'll start out, obviously, coaching them, but eventually it's sort of like, you know, pupil meets teacher, and if they can beat me after beating everybody else, then they're going to win themselves $1 million.
Yeah, well, you've got to know that if at the end you're playing them for the $1 million prize, the coaching that you gave them along the way might help them. So you might, you know what? Well, here's a good idea. One of my coaching tips to you kids would be give off as many tells as possible. You know. Do whatever you can to help your game by the time it gets to the end.
Well, no, I mean, overall, like I said, I think we've really come up with a unique format. We've learned some lessons from some other shows that we've seen on television that sort of haven't hit the mark and kind of missed the mark in terms of the game show aspect. So, we're taking lessons from things we've seen there and going to make sure that this show has all the elements necessary to make it fun for the casual viewer and the diehard poker player.
Daniel, we were talking earlier about some of the younger players now, and, of course, you with the nickname Kid Poker. When you were just getting going in the world of poker and learning the game, with guys like Alan Cunningham, and I guess Phil Ivey was one of them, and I think John Juwando was part of that group as well. You guys used to go out to dinner a lot after playing and kind of rehash what you'd done and talk strategy, right?
Yeah, you know, it's not any different than what, you know, young online kids are doing today. You know, they play online. Even now they do it on internet forums where they discuss strategy, but a lot of them meet, you know, and they discuss, you know, how they played hands. And, you know, when we were younger, we didn't have internet forums to do that. Well, I mean, there were, but none of us were going to get into that. The four of us used to play. We'd travel to tournaments. We'd go eat, and then, you know, we'd talk about hands. And, you know, Juwanda and Ivy would argue about how to play a hand, and Alan would tell us the right way to play it. That's kind of how it went. Because yeah. It was an interesting dynamic of a group, because Ivy was the biggest gambler of the four of us. My style was much more similar to Ivy's, so we thought along the same lines. Alan just knew the right answer to everything. And Juwanda had this, like, rule where if you lost, you must have played badly. Like, he was just...
Oh, sheesh.
He just had a more conservative view. So it was a very interesting group because, again, we had very different views within the group on how to play hands, and that, you know, helped us all get better.
That's an amazing quartet of players right there.
No,
Negreanu,
kid.
Ivy, Juwanda, and Cunningham. When you were having these discussions, do you think that you took pieces of their game and adapted them to your game?
Absolutely. You know, there's, for example, like 7-card stud and pot limit Omaha. I learned specifically how to play that, and I would say almost to a T, I learned how to play both those games from Phil Ivey. Deuce to 7 triple draw, I had no idea how to play the game. John Juwanda told me exactly how to play the game. So, and Alan and I used to discuss everything, so, you know, we've always discussed strategy. But, yeah, I mean, I see some of the things that, you know, Phil loves to play a ton of hands and PLO and stud, and I learned how to, you know, there's method to that madness, and I learned how to implement it just from a few tips he'd given me. And triple draw, Juwanda just gave me the, you know, just the absolute nuts and bolts on the math of the game and how, you know, simple it is. And with that, I added a little bit of my own spin. But, yeah, I learned a great deal. And here's one thing I want to add is that, you know, say if you're a mixed game player, you can never be as good as the players in the big game unless you play in it. And the reason for that is the best learn from each other. So it's like, unless you're part of that group, you can never really learn the kind of tricks that are happening in that game. It's hard to explain, I guess, but your game evolves when you have to play against really top-level competition.
I'm telling you what, being able to go around the world the last year, being able to play against people like you, has definitely improved my game a lot. I'm a heck of a lot better player now than I was a year ago, just from the opportunity I got by making that final table. Daniel, you've hit it on the nail on the head right there. You've got to play against those people to improve your game. Absolutely.
Before we let you go, Daniel, one more Twitter question from a listener by the name of Jack, who wants to ask you about using Twitter. He said, I saw that you were tweeting a lot during the World Series of Poker, sometimes about hands you had just played. Don't you worry about people at the table knowing what you played?
Well, if I did, I wouldn't tweet it. Or I had an interesting situation once where Barry Greenstein was at my table, and he was tweeting, and I was tweeting, and I'd read, you know, Barry would play a hand, and he'd say, well, you know, I just had aces in a big pot, and I'm like, I'm thinking, you know what? Barry might just be bluff-tweeting me. He might just be bluff-tweeting. Like, you know, you could tweet that, and there's people at your table. So how do you know what I wrote is actually real? If I know guys are tweeting, I could just say, you know, I just bluffed this guy. I had absolutely nothing in his hand, and he folded. Phew! Meanwhile, I had the nuts. So you have to take it with a grain of salt if you're sitting at the table. Am I telling the truth, or am I fibbing?
That is a new phrase for the poker lexicon, bluff-tweeting.
Yeah.
I love that. All right, let's get in a couple of plugs for Daniel Negreanu. The book, by the way, last year was absolutely phenomenal. Just a real pleasure to read, Power Hold'em Strategy, you and all the other contributors. I enjoyed that a lot. Daniel's blog is on fullcontactpoker.com. Are you still involved with Poker VT?
Yeah, absolutely. Poker VT just did a really cool video with five of the other pros where we all played at the same time, and we all shot the video from our own perspective. So that should be fun to watch, I think, for a lot of the players.
And, of course, Daniel's a member of Team Poker Stars Pro, which means I'm sure you're going to be headed to London pretty soon to play in the EPT. And will you also be in the WSOP Europe?
I'm actually headed. I'm going to play the Caesars Cup event in WSOP, then London, the WSOP E. Then I'm going to probably play the high roller in London for the EPT, but I have to skip the EPT London because that's the same. It's conflicting timing with the Poker Stars Million Dollar Challenge in Los Angeles.
Ah, okay. Well, Daniel, I thank you very much for coming on here. I always love talking to you. I'm telling you what, you are turning into a great ambassador for the sport. The guys out there just flocked around you during the fantasy football, and you treated them all as a gentleman, shook hands, took pictures, whatever it took. So just whatever you're doing, keep it up. How's that?
All right, buddy. Good luck with your fantasy team next year.
Right. Thanks, Daniel.
Take care, Daniel.
Daniel Negreanu joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance. How do you not like Daniel Negreanu?
I know, he's just like that in person. I'm telling you, this is as though he was sitting at the table talking to us with no microphone.
It's exactly the way he
is. Exactly the way he is.
And by the way, could be sitting around the dinner table or the poker table.
Or any table, or the bar, or the whatever.
Still the same guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, the Poker Players Alliance is another one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table, and we're happy to have them on board and to support them as well. You can support them by going to the website, theppa.org, and join up. This is an alliance of people like you who love the game of poker, whether you play it online, whether you play it in casino poker rooms like here at Lumiere Place in downtown St. Louis. Maybe you play it in home games. Maybe you're starting out as a young pro and you're traveling around to tournaments here and there. This is an organization that helps you and fellow poker players just like you. But they can't do it without your support. It only costs about $20 to join, and that money will go help the fight at legislative and judicial levels all around the country. It's the Poker Players Alliance. Find out more by going to the website, theppa.org. We're back right after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Sit down to play tonight. They're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the Final Table here at the Lumiere Casino and Hotel. Let me tell you a little bit about what I did last night, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I was over at the Kelo Foundation. We had a great golf outing. It's a beautiful thing. Dr. Kelo is with the Diabetes Foundation there on it. And something great. Tony Spielberg, a gentleman from Reactor Watch, walked over there and donated two different Reactor watches. That's the watch that I wear all the time. I'm so proud of and everything like that.
Yep.
People loved them. They got to actually see these. So one of them was a beautiful woman's watch with several diamonds around it and set up like that. Raised a ton of money for the Kelo Foundation. They had another one over in the silent auction, a man's watch and that. These things are sports watches that are just so durable, so great. You can wear them out on the golf course. You can wear them while you're playing softball. It wouldn't make any difference. Things are great watches. I'm telling you what, guys, if you don't have a Reactor watch right now, you need to get one. Go to Reactor.com, look them over. Find what you want. These are great watches. And thanks again to Reactor Watch for helping support some of the charities that I work with.
And we're happy to have them as a sponsor of the show here every week as well. Time now to bring in the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing just fine. Did you enjoy Mr. Negreanu tonight?
Yeah, I'm wondering why I couldn't go first. I get to follow Daniel.
Yeah, you can tell us everything he said that was wrong.
you're very welcome. What do you have for us tonight in the Poker Coach segment?
Well, I figured we could go over a hand that Hawad Khan actually played about a year ago, and he did a little segment in last week's main event from the World Series of Poker. It's a pretty interesting hand and kind of involved a lot of tells, and we'll chat about that.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, Hawad had a hand. He was in the big blind. I apologize not for remembering the gentleman's name, and maybe you guys can help me either with his name, but I think, if I'm mistaken, he ended up making the final table with us the year before. Do you guys know the hand that I'm talking about with the King 8 when they were both in the big blind on last week's segment that you watched last week?
I watched it, but I don't remember the hand.
No. I remember his comments on it, though. But go ahead,
okay,
Joe.
Okay, if you guys remember a little of what I'm talking about, that's good. But basically, it had folded around, unlimped, unraised, no action, and the other gentleman, his first name's John, limped. And Hawad had King 8 in the big blind and chose just to call, which I really liked because he explained that this other player had been very aggressive, and if he would have raised in the big blind with the king eight, he knew he would have been called. So therefore, he's helping to keep the pot small, see a cheap flop, and making a raise he thought would have been a bad play. Flop came out ace, 10, 8. So Havad flopped bottom pair with a king kicker. It's also interesting to note that it was a rainbow flop. In the small blind, the other gentleman that had the he actually ended up having ace 9. I believe what he did was check, and then Havad checked. You with me so far, guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, on the turn, what happens is an 8 comes, which is kind of funny because Havad said that's the best thing that he did in the hand, was hitting the 8 on the turn, which is kind of cute.
Uh-huh.
And this is when John, the other gentleman, made $400,000 to go. And this is a key with a tell for our listeners. Havad quick called, which he feels, and I unquestionably feel, is a sign of weakness. Okay, so he's trying to set up that he's weak and he's on some type of draw to make his opponent feel like, you know, he might be able to fire and bluff again on the river by just quick calling the $400,000.
John, let me just interrupt you for a second. When you see that at a table, and I'll ask Dennis the same question, when you make a bet and you see somebody insta-call you, that usually tells you that they don't have a monster?
Usually means a draw. And sometimes, to me, like actually I just ran a big bluff in my game last week against a guy that was quick calling me. And to me, you know, I had been pretty aggressive on the table. And to me, when he does that, it's like, Joe, I'm calling you. I'm going to call you down. Slow down. You know, I have something. Slow down. And then I fire in the fourth shell on the river with a big, big bluff, and it was a big, big bet. Now he says, oh, geez, you know, did I really walk into a set? Did Joe McGowan really have a big, big hand here? And he laid it down. So to me, yes, the quick call for me, for sure, in general, not every single time, without a doubt, equals, you know, some type of draw, some type of, you know, calling hand. They're trying to get their opponent to slow down, and to me it's more weakness than strength for sure. Because if someone's strong, usually will think a little bit and try to, you know, show a little weakness and Hollywood a little bit. Would you agree, Dennis?
Oh, I agree 100% with it. And at times I got to be careful because I can do some quick calls too, especially if a guy makes a smaller bet. You know, it's almost like a release thing. You know, you only bet such and such. I can call that. I get to see the other card with my draw, my flush, my straight, my whatever the heck. I like sitting behind a guy. Sometimes I'll do a quick one like that on purpose. Guy makes a preflop raise. I just call him. He makes what may be a continuation. Maybe he's missed the flop completely, and you throw out the money immediately. He's got to put you on at least a little something. So then if he checks the turn, he may be giving up on the pot, which is also nice on that. So I don't mind that at all.
Okay, so Havan does that after hitting the 8 on the turn, and he wanted to show the guy that he was weak.
Right, by the quick call. And
okay.
Now, on, you know, now again, it's a complete rainbow. So the draw that's out there is the straight draw. There's a straight draw out there, you know, with the ace 10, it could be a gut shot straight draw, it could be a double gutter, it could be like a, you know, well, a number of different range of hands, which could be some type of straight draw. The river comes a jack, and on the river, John now checks, and Havad felt he's either check folding or maybe check calling with an ace, but what Havad didn't mention, he might even call with a 10, because with the paired board, if he had a 10, now he has 8s and 10s with the ace that's on the board for a kicker, so even a 10, if you really believe that your opponent's bluffing, it might be a tough laydown for some players, but as it turns out, the gentleman had an ace. So what Havad did, which was interesting, made a big, big overbet, just over $2 million, which again helped sell the story that he was weak and on the bluff. And I don't know how much time, you know, the other gentleman went into the tank or how long it took, because, you know, with the editing, who knows, and I wasn't there. But he ends up calling, and Havad wins an awesome pot. And I just feel really outplayed his opponent in this spot. This is stuff that I try to talk about, you know, for our listeners, to try to be able to take some of this stuff in. Try to be able to implement some of these things into your own game. Try to be able to do, you know, we always joke on the show about the reverse tells and all, but try to be able to implement some of those things into your game. You know, knowing when your opponent is going to go for some of this stuff, that might be the tricky part. You know, I think that Havad felt like this opponent is sharp enough to pick up the fact that I'm quick calling, that he's sharp enough to pick up the fact that I'm overbetting this pot. If you do this against someone who, you know, thinks whatever and just kind of playing their cards, none of this stuff will work. because they're just playing their cards. You have to pick the opponents that you do it with. You have to be careful with the position. You have to be careful of what your image is. You know, you have to be careful of what the chip stacks are. Where all of these things add up, and you're able to play some really, really good poker and win some extra chips that you typically don't have.
I think you've done very well on this one, Joe. I agree totally on it. And that overbet on the river, I mean, again, most people, the way I look at it, anytime somebody does something that doesn't add up, you know, I want to see his cards if I can. And when he made that bet, it didn't add up. He was throwing too much money out there, you know. So that's why it was a reverse. That's exactly right. You would expect him then to be on the bluff, to try to be buying the pot. You're going to call him. He's going to be embarrassed. Do I have to show my cards? Boom, you take the pot down. He turns over a set.
Mm-hmm.
The guy had to just wilt in his chair when he saw the two
Well,
eights.
Let me ask both of you, and we've only got about a minute and a half left here for this question, but how do you know if you're in Havad's seat there and you're playing that, do you make the huge overbet as a reverse tell to say to, as if you're acting like you're weak, but you're actually very strong? How do you know when to do that as opposed to putting in a value bet so that you know you're going to get a call from the guy? How do you know?
Well, that's
poker.
What's that, Dennis?
I said that's poker.
Yeah, it's
you
poker.
You don't know.
But a little bit of the reading ability, you know, I think
exactly.
If you feel, if Havad felt, and I don't know how he felt in that hand, and it's cool that he is a Poker Stars pro, and Dennis and you guys, you've had him on the show, and you know, who knows, maybe we could ask him that one day, and he'll come back on the show. We could even talk to him about the hand. But, you know, if he feels that he has something, and he will call, and he will go for it, and he's playing an ace or a 10 with the two pair with the ace kicker, and the story has set up, you know, you can put in the big, big bet, and they'll go for it. And on a smaller level, other than, you know, these huge tournaments and in that huge spot, I do that every single, not, you know, winning every single time, but for the most part I do, because I am definitely a winning player, I do it every single time that I sit down and playing cash games where you have to make that read that this person will lay this down, this person will go for this, this person won't go for that, this person's a calling station, this person, you know, overplays their hands, this person, you know, raises weak all the time. This person, I want to isolate all those things, all those little parts of the game that you add up to being a better player. You know, that's where, you know, knowing to value bet or to try to show that you're weak and that the bluff is going to sell, which is what he was selling, though. He was selling that
gotcha.
From the turn by the quick call.
Yep.
I think that's the way, reason why he chose to play it that way, Paul.
Joe McGowan, the poker coach, a contributor every week here to the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com. Remember, if you've got questions, you can email them to dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. And our thanks to the folks here at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. Don't forget about their show, Legends in Concert. They do 7 shows a week. A new show starting tomorrow has people doing Elton John and Janet Jackson and Lionel Richie and Madonna and the Blues Brothers. And they've also got the real Travis Tritt coming to town on November 13th. Tickets for that show are on sale now. For Dennis Phillips and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan and Daniel Negreanu, I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening to the Lumiere Place Final Table.